Today is April 11th, 2018, and this is episode number 457 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I am kicking myself for not buying this campaign desk that I found on eBay, and I knew I wanted it, and I wanted it, and I totally wanted it, and I was going to get it, but I hemmed and I hawed, and I didn't get it, and then it sold. I'm kicking myself, kicking myself, kicking myself, kicking myself. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you visit MacObserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note on Facebook at Facebook.com/groups/ContextMachine. Join our community there. Take part in the conversation.
Maybe provide your own therapy ideas for Brian or tips on how he can avoid having the same problem. Tell me what happened, Brian. What brings you to my therapy couch today?
Okay. All right. Listen. So I've got all these sealing wax stamps, wax seal stamps for writing letters.
Not wax to polish the ceiling, which I thought that's what it was when I was a kid.
Fair enough. This would be, you know, we talked about this before. It's, you know, the ceiling wax, you know, to seal the you write a letter, you close it, and you put the wax on it, and you stamp it. Make sure that no one tampers with it. And it is just this lovely anachronistic throwback, and I love anachronisms. And yeah, so anyway, so I've got all these stamps. More importantly, though, I've got all of these different colors of wax. And they get scattered. And then I've also got paint pens to paint my to paint the raised part. And I've got these metallic ink pads for actually painting the depression on the stamp. If I want to go that route instead, I really like doing that too. And you know, the stuff ends up getting scattered, and I wanted to keep it all together. And, Nick, I'm going to blame Nick here.
Okay.
My calligraphy buddy, right? He's the guy that actually got me into fountain pens. And also, by the way, I wanted to keep my fountain pens together, but,
of course
he suggested that I get, what used to be called a traveling desk or a campaign desk. And that would be this box that had a sloped writing surface. When you would open it, it would form the sloped writing surface that was usually coated in, not coated, but covered in leather, so that you could write when you were, you know, traveling or campaigning if you were in the military.
Right. So you're out and about, and it's, "My dearest Matilda."
Exactly.
The weather is balmy today. The servants are complaining. I had them shot again.
Exactly.
Yours, Ruprecht.
Exactly. You could talk about, like, you know, your dysentery conditions and the natives and all kinds of politically correct. As one does, right? And I thought this would be a fantastic idea. I ended up getting this art supply box that is a pretty good design. It's intended for, like, paintbrushes and things like that. It's pretty good design and everything, but it's not quite big enough, and it's definitely cheap. And I finally found a campaign desk that was the best looking one that I'd seen. And it was like a half to a third the price of the quality ones that I'd seen.
And so you jumped on it and bought it.
No, I dilly-dallied and hemmed and hawed.
So why did you do that? You knew it was exactly what you wanted.
I don't know. And I knew what I would do. I mean, one reason I didn't jump on it is because it was still, you know, it's a lot of money to put out for something. But I knew I'd kick myself. And then right before we started recording, I went to go, you know, check up on the listing. And sure enough, it sold this morning. It's nice. It was sucks. Burled wood with brass, brass bindings and inlay. And it was really, really nice. I should have bought it.
Yeah. And, so now the hunt goes on, and the ones that you have shown me today, they just, I mean, they're nice, but they're not the one that sold already.
No, that one really was. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous that I sat on it and didn't snap it up.
So now you have to live like an animal with fountain pens scattered everywhere, with wax seals.
Who knows where?
Displayed willy-nilly.
Who knows where they are at this point? It's all scattered.
It's you, sir, are in a right tizzy.
I am in a right tizzy, but it's my own fault. I had it right there. It was ridiculous that I didn't snap it up. Okay. Anyway, this is a show about technology.
Oh, well, to be fair, that is technology. It's just antiquated compared to what we have today.
Anachronistic.
But I like that I pointed out when you were showing me these travel campaign desks, mm-hmm. I pointed out that these were the laptops of their day.
They were literally the laptops of their day. I saw one earlier. I didn't show it to you, but I saw one that actually had a roll top.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It was kind of expensive. You would have people if you had that desk.
Yes. Well, you need them to probably carry it. Probably pretty heavy. Yeah. But, and the roll top still worked too.
That's pretty impressive.
If you've ever actually been in front of a roll top desk, a lot of times they don't necessarily open, but this was a little a campaign desk. You know, it's like a foot and a half deep or wide at its longest, and usually only about 6 inches tall, but it had a little roll top. Good times, right?
That sounds really nice.
Do you hear the sound? Does that come through? Okay.
Well, that's
good.
I got just a tiny bit of it.
Got just a tiny bit. All right. Well, listen, this is partially for Kelly.
Okay.
Because Kelly is a fan of the clicky keyboards. Mm-hmm. And I have been testing this keyboard and wrote up a review of it. And I thought it would actually engender a deeper conversation about Mac keyboards between us, with this one to kind of spark it off. But I did not include a recording of the way this keyboard sounds in the piece. I thought about it, but honestly, I just didn't have time to.
That's okay, because you're going to make it happen now, and you can add a link to the show back to the piece, and people can come hear what it sounds like.
That's exactly what I was thinking when I blew it off for the piece. But so let me mute myself, and so I can move the microphone without killing everybody's ears.
Okay.
And I'm going to move the microphone away from my lips down to the keyboard, mm-hmm. because Discord bizarrely, like you could hear it when we do our Google Hangouts meetings, you could hear it, right?
If I listened closely.
Huh. All right. So anyway, let me mute.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what happens. And I hope Brian remembers to unmute. I see what you did there. Yeah. Did you like that? I see
what you did there.
See, no dead space. It was great.
Okay. So I'm bending over a bit here. Let me type type something, and so you guys can hear this glorious.
You know the awesome thing, sound. Brian? No. Oh, there it is.
And since this is, I'll go ahead and make this a little more realistic, since this is me typing.
Backspacing a lot.
Absolutely. Can you hear that? Is it loud?
It's awesome. It's almost as if you were trying to stage your own performance of the typewriter, and your silence tells me you're not familiar with this.
My sounds should tell you that I was actually moving my microphone back into place.
Oh, and you're muted.
And I was muted, yeah. But I'm also not familiar with it. Okay.
So the typewriter, and this is fantastic. Listeners, go Google this after the show, because it probably explains a lot about me, because I think this is a wonderful piece. So the typewriter, it was a concerto written for mechanical typewriter and orchestra. So the solo instrument in this piece that. Is the typewriter.
I remember that.
Oh, it's wonderful. Absolutely yeah. wonderful. And you know what? I'm going to find the video of my favorite performance of this, because the guy that played the typewriter had it so perfect. It was just wonderful. So I know it's on YouTube. So I'll find that and we can
include it in the
show notes. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. All right. So this is the retro classic BT. I think I got the name right. Retro classic. Yep. Retro classic BT from ASIO. And okay. The reason why I'm reviewing it is because I had done cool stuff found on the USB version, but the USB version doesn't support the Mac for some weird reason that I still don't understand. Right? The Bluetooth version supports the Mac. The USB version does not, and I don't really see how that's possible. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
So I have a hypothesis. And my hypothesis is that with the USB version, they don't include the Mac-specific keys for you to swap out.
Yeah, and there's no, and so the keys aren't properly mapped, too.
Yeah, but they'll map properly when you plug the keyboard in. You know the whole thing where the keyboard plugs in?
They tell me it won't work.
Huh.
Because I asked this scenario, this is just the case where... And they said, no, you have to get the Bluetooth version. So, whatever.
Okay, whatever. This,
it's a mechanical keyboard, and it's got a really long throw for the keys. And it reminds me, the action reminds me a whole lot of the old Apple Extended Keyboard 2 from the mid-90s. A keyboard I loved.
Okay. And so, that's the litmus test right there. If the keyboard reminds you of the aircraft carrier... then that's a really good thing, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because the keys are, we've got a link to the review in the show notes.
Oh, so, sweet.
And I included several pictures, that were really kind of like my love letter to this keyboard.
I hadn't picked up on that.
Huh. The keys are designed to look like they're from a typewriter, from
an old 100-year-old typewriter.
Yeah, 100-year-old typewriter. They're circular.
I love that they're circular. I love that they're elevated in relation to the keyboard deck.
They've got a raised rim
mm-hmm.
that looks like it's metal, but it's not. Those are actually plastic, but they match. They precisely match. It's stunning to me how closely they match, because there's different materials, right? You've got this, the surface of my particular model, the model that I asked them to send me is leather. And then it has is black leather, and it has a, copper anodized aluminum. They said it's an alloy. I don't know what it's an alloy of, but probably aluminum around the edge that has raised screws that are not subtle, and it's got a very steampunky kind of aesthetic. It's not quite steampunk, but it's like a steampunk sensibility is how I put it in the review.
Kind of steampunk punk, kind of Brazil.
Huh? Yeah. Well, Brazil had a steampunk sensibility.
Yeah, it did.
The steampunk wasn't a thing yet.
Yeah. It's yeah.
Anyway, whatever. The color that's on the aluminum frame precisely matches these keys. And I thought these keys were metal until I went to go replace, because what they do is they give you a bag of replacement Mac keys for Mac users. So, okay. You know, command for the alt, and alt for alt slash option for the Windows key. And the Mac control key has the little triangle on it.
Okay, cool.
The carrot symbol. Oh, okay. Whereas the Windows version does not have that, because that's the way Apple refers to the control key. And then it's got replacement F keys, replacement function key, and then an eject key too, which the Windows keyboard does not use.
And you, isn't and you control it awesome which, that it includes an eject key for keyboards that don't have optical drive anymore?
Yes, sort of.
Yeah. I just find it funny. But anyhow, carry on.
Some do. And then on the back, there's a switch to go from Mac to PC mode. You can also run it in USB mode. Again, funny that the US keyboard doesn't at least officially support the Mac. And I was able to pair it with my iPad and use it just fine with my iPad.
Yeah, which does not surprise me at all.
Of course, it's a Bluetooth keyboard.
Yeah.
So, and it's got the 6,000 milliamp hour battery inside this keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have the backlighting turned off, the keyboard will last for you. And if you're using the backlighting, depending upon the intensity, which I have it at its max, it'll last 1 to 3 months on a charge, according to the company.
Okay. So that's good.
Yeah. And backlighting, backlighting is one of the things I love about this. In fact, so much do I love backlighting so much on this keyboard, it really makes me tense that Apple's aluminum keyboard doesn't have backlighting.
I have a solution for that too.
Yeah. Do you?
Yeah. So when we were at CES in January, I paid a visit to the Matthias booth. Ooh. And so full disclosure, no secret to anyone as far as I know, I really, really like Matthias keyboards. And so
for sure.
Yeah. So they made a year ago a Bluetooth keyboard that's like Apple's aluminum keyboard. So extended keyboard, and it has a year battery life, and it's a really well-designed keyboard. And one of the common requests that they got for that keyboard was backlighting. So at CES this year, they showed off the backlit version, and you can choose the backlight color, like on the fly. You want blue today? Great. You want red? Switch it to red.
That is cool.
Yeah. So if you're into Apple's aluminum keyboard and you want to have something that has even more robust keys, but still has a similar feel plus backlighting, and you want the color that matches your computer, Matthias.
Yeah, this does not match my Mac.
And but I'm okay it doesn't with that, matter because it's glorious.
I wish my Mac matched it. That would also be cool.
You know, you could make that happen.
Anodize the aluminum?
I was thinking head over to your local craft store and get the it's a kind of leaf sheet stuff that looks like metal.
Mm-hmm.
And you could kind of burl it onto to your computer.
This is a thing I could do.
And then you could get little,
that I'm ending my endorsement
and
with that wording.
Glue them on and like glue little gears and bolts.
These
on.
Are things that I could do. Yes.
And you could,
these
you things could that greeble could the crap out of that thing and make it look so steampunk.
I could, in fact. So I love this keyboard. It's super heavy. It's super heavy. It's you know, I've been using Apple's aluminum keyboard for a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
And it is tiring compared to using the short throw keyboard. That's for sure. It's different, but it is so satisfying. And it reminds me of Apple's extended keyboard too, even more than Matthias's keyboard. To do the same thing. When I used the Matthias keyboard, I didn't not did not feel like the extended keyboard 2 to me.
How long ago did you use the Matthias keyboard?
It was a while ago, for sure.
Yeah. My guess is if you sat down at my desk and tried mine, which is a newer model, I love that Matthias Tactile Pro keyboard so much that I've actually worn them out, which I know is hard to believe.
Sure. No, for sure.
And so the one that I have now has much newer, it's a much newer version. And what they did ultimately was they went and redesigned the physical switch mechanism because it just wasn't quite right, they felt. And now it really has that good, solid feel of Apple's extended keyboard. It feels like the aircraft carrier, but in some ways it kind of feels better too. Next time you come around the glass to my side of the office, you'll have to check out my keyboard. Tell me what you think.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'd like to. I like Matthias. They're a great company. Mm-hmm. They're a great company and they make great keyboards for sure. This one to me does well anyway. I haven't used the newer ones. It's been a while, that's for sure. So I'm not really sure. All I can tell you is that I do like this one. It's expensive at $219.
Oh, okay.
So you know, you're paying for what you get. And if you don't like clicky long throw keyboards, you're gonna hate this thing.
So I'm gonna love it.
Yeah, you will probably love it. Kelly would probably love it. She was trying to avoid hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to trick her into listening to the show.
Perfect.
Because she's going to want one.
Perfect. You know what I find to be absolutely fascinating, Brian, is that people that are really into short throw keyboards, mm-hmm. just generally speaking, and I know it's not everyone, but generally speaking, when I start talking to them about what I like about a long throw keyboard, mm-hmm. they immediately dismiss me. And they'll kind of mock what I'm saying. It's like they are so adamant that long throw keyboards are bad, they can't even listen to someone telling them why they like one.
Well, but it's subjective. I think it's a very valid thing not to want to.
Oh, sure.
A long throw keyboard.
Totally get why a lot of people really, really like those short throw keyboards.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I'm probably faster on my Apple keyboard.
I am not, and it's because I try and long throw on a short board or short throw keyboard, and
that doesn't stop if you do it long enough.
Well, eventually, when the keyboard breaks, it stops.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, my fingers always hurt after using short throw keyboard. Because apparently I'm typing all the way through to the back of the keyboard.
Well, so one thing that's interesting is the key, the press registers before it hits the bottom of the stroke. So you don't have to hammer them all the way down to the floor.
But why wouldn't you? Because that satisfying feel as you get that solid click.
It's so satisfying. Stops. So satisfying. The backlighting, by the way, I was kind of surprised to figure out when I was replacing the Mac keys. Each key has its own LED,
which is nice.
You get a really consistent lighting. Like I've seen some keyboards where, like, you know, it's using some kind of panel. Or maybe even in the middle it's dark, or there's like a band of dark or whatever. Mm-hmm. But each one has its own LED for consistent lighting. It's also really, really tall. It may be taller than an aircraft.
That wouldn't surprise me based on the photos, because you've got the keyboard bed with feet underneath.
Yeah. So, super heavy duty, metal feet with a rubberized coating on the bottom.
And then the keys themselves are lifted up above the keyboard bed. So yeah, it seems to me like there's a lot of height there for a keyboard.
Yeah, it is a lot of height. And when it comes, so like Discord seems to block it out, because Discord is really, really good at filtering, much better than, say, Skype, which we used to use for recording our shows. But on a phone call, it's very, very evident. So, like, you know, you can't be typing in secret, which I tend to do when I'm on a phone call, because, you know, because Brian, you're going to get busted if you try to do that.
Brian, just so you know, you're busted anyhow. No one needs to hear the keyboard.
Why?
Because you multitask poorly.
No.
Okay. Brian, you multitask the best.
Keyboards. Matthias, I like what this company is doing. They have other models in this. They've got one, for instance, that's like a rose gold finish with white instead of, you know, it doesn't look steampunky at all. Actually, it probably would match some of Apple's modern kit. I'm actually belatedly pulling up. So they've got one that's wood and real wood instead of real leather. By the way, it is real leather. So, like, if you have a problem with leather, you wouldn't want to get this. But it is real leather. It's one of the things you're paying for.
Okay.
And they've all got this. They've all got the big non-subtle screws holding the metal band around. But one's got wood and a sort of gray dark metal edge, and then pink with a white. And what's the other one? Yeah, pink with white, rose gold with white, I should say. It looks nice, except for I personally wouldn't want it. And there's mine, and then there's a sort of gray, another gray one too. And then they have some other products that I haven't tested. This is the only ASIO keyboard I have tested.
So, Brian, in your review, you commented that it has a 1 year battery life. And said something to the effect of, but, you know, why would you ever need that sort of a thing?
Yeah, why would you not have backlighting on?
Yeah, and...
Because to get that year, you have to turn the backlighting off.
Right, so you get 1 to 3 months with backlighting on, 12 months with the backlighting off. And I can tell you the reason why someone would use it with the backlighting off to get 1 year, so they never have to think about... If charging the keyboard, because I mean,
then you're not getting the backlighting.
I know.
Backlighting is glorious. I like the back. I don't know. My office is kind of dark right now, but the backlighting shows up even though it's not super bright, unless it's bright out there, you know, unless it's bright in my room.
It's possible. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose that's subjective too, but I'll charge it up once a month. I'm okay with that. I mean, Apple's keyboard needs to be charged. Not much more than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just so you know, on the 1 hour battery life thing, that the Matthias Bluetooth keyboard, the one that does not have backlighting, I decided to put them to the test because they said it goes a whole year on a charge, so I charged it up.
Yep.
And then lost the charge cable. Go me. But it's a standard cable, so it's not going to be a problem. And I ran it for a year without charging it.
That's nice.
It actually really lasted a year.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that was in March when the 1 year point hit. And one of these days I need to get around to finding a USB cable to plug into that and charge it back up, because occasionally when I go to use it, I have to hit the power button more than once to get it to stay on. And I'm sure it's because the battery is like, I have no juice.
Yeah, probably. Sure. That makes sense. This one, by the way, has a battery saver mode. So the backlighting goes off after 5 minutes of inactivity. And I can't remember the exact length of time, but then it goes into sort of a sleep mode if you go with activity longer. And when the backlighting goes up, it's still responsive. But in the mornings after it's been off for you know, many hours, I need to hit a couple of keys a couple of times to get it to wake up.
Yeah. Well, that seems pretty much normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's
how Bluetooth works. Apple's keyboard, though, if I go for the Bluetooth keyboard, which is my other keyboard right now, if I wake my computer up, waking the computer up wakes the keyboard up, even if I don't use the keyboard to wake the computer up. If I use my mouse to wake my iMac up, it wakes the keyboard up too.
Yeah.
So anyway, there you have it. Great keyboard, in my opinion. If you don't like clickies, you're going to hate it. If you don't like the long throw, you're going to hate it.
I think it sounds like a wonderful keyboard.
I listed the same pros and cons. The pros and cons are exactly the same. Let me find what my pros and cons were. Pros. Loud, long throw keyboard with backlit keys, heavy, and a retro steampunk sensibility. Cons. Loud, long throw keyboard with backlit keys, heavy, and a retro steampunk sensibility. Yeah. Anyway, there's like, you know, some people love this stuff and some people hate it.
I think it looks like an awesome keyboard. And I love how it sounds.
Awesome. Thanks. Good stuff. Good stuff. Thanks to Azio for sending it to me for review. And there you have it. Let's see here. So where are we? We had another talk. Oh, yeah. I've got an interesting question for you.
Okay.
It's been on my mind for a couple of days, you know, because you got this delete Facebook business. You've got Mark Zuckerberg speaking to the Senate, being grilled by the Senate. And then you've got, like, he's basically said that he feels that regulation for his space is inevitable. And the thought that's been kicking around my head is this. Apple collects, or at least has access to, a lot of information. There's some things that it doesn't has access to. For instance, iMessages.
Mm-hmm.
Right, those are encrypted end-to-end. Unless you're backing this stuff up to the iCloud, Apple's not going to be able to get to it, even if you wanted Apple to. There are other things that Apple could collect but doesn't. And some things Apple collects and anonymizes. And most of us, certainly myself included, trust Apple at its word that Apple is not collecting the stuff, not using it, not making us the product. And then when it does collect information, that it anonymizes that information in such a way it can't be tied back to us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I was also thinking about Mark Zuckerberg's assertion that essentially that privacy is for the rich, and that if the poor are going to have access to a service like Facebook, basically Facebook has to exploit everybody's information in order to pay for it.
Cause that's just the law of nature.
That's just the law of nature. There's no other middle ground, whatever. I disagree. And that's not what he said word for word, but that is in my opinion, that's the meaning of what he said. And I was thinking, like, so, all right. Sorry for my scattered thoughts here. The real thing that Mark Zuckerberg didn't say, but should have said, is if someone like me wants to build a service like this and be a billionaire really, really fast, the only way is to make the member, the user, a product, make the customer a product.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth. You can build a platform like Facebook. It's just, you know, the leaders aren't going to be, you know, billionaires in a couple of years. They're not going to be able to get the kind of growth that they need to become billionaires, you know, virtually overnight without making the person the product. That's the truth. And he didn't say that. He said that the only way to build it is to do this stuff. So I got to thinking, if Facebook, because so like this Cambridge Analytica thing and people's exposure
mm-hmm.
To having their profiles plundered by third parties that are abusing Facebook's system. But at the same time, you know, Facebook's system exists to accumulate and disperse these profiles. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
if Facebook were to reform itself into a company that's more like Google, where, yeah, they're collecting all that information, but it's so that they can be the arbiters and not expose your information directly.
Okay.
Would we trust Facebook?
I wouldn't.
Why?
Because...
Can you say what I just said more succinctly?
If Facebook promised to not share your information with pretty much anyone that wanted it, would you believe that promise?
If they worked to protect our privacy while still collecting information about us, would you trust them? I guess that's the most succinct way to say it.
Yeah. Okay. And my answer is no, unless they allowed an independent third party system to or monitor to be able to follow what they're doing and verify what they're doing all the time. So that what they would need to do is let an independent organization continually verify that, yes, this is in fact what they're doing. And the reason I would need to see that before I would be willing to trust if Facebook is really doing this, regardless of what promise that they would make to us as users, to any government, is because they have a very long and clear track record of not wanting to do that. And even when they say that they have been protecting our information, we find that, no, in fact, they have not. And now they've come out and said, paraphrasing, look, we have to sell you to make money. That's the way it works.
Well, so the difference being to sell us or to sell access to us. I mean, like, is, I guess one of the things that's come out of all this is the fact that there is a bit of a difference between Google and Facebook. Google is at least as intrusive, at least where they can be. I guess actually Facebook probably has access to more. I think we willingly enter more information into Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Then we willingly enter into Google. I think Google may be better at ferreting out stuff. I don't know. It's hard to know. Facebook certainly knows a lot about us too. But Facebook doesn't have mechanisms for people to like see all of our information and our friends' information, not even through Google Plus.
Yeah, the intrusiveness that Facebook has or offers is downright scary.
It's for Google to exploit as opposed to Google to proffer up. Right? I mean, Google sells access to us and Facebook has in the past willingly offered up our information.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a slight difference there. It's still not what Apple's doing. And I still trust Apple with my information because Apple's not making us the product at all. And both Google and Facebook are both making us the product. But Facebook has done so in an even more egregious way, I think. And that's what's coming back to haunt Mark Zuckerberg. Now, do you remember, by the way, Tim Cook hasn't gotten any credit for this, but Tim Cook has said that he thought that privacy was going to become a selling point.
Yeah.
And you and I have talked quite a bit about like, you know, what's Apple going to do to actually help make that the case?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that Tim Cook did just recently, which some people would look at as kind of a dick move when he was asked, what would you do if you were in Facebook's position right now? And his response was, well, first, I wouldn't be in that position.
Yes.
And that was, I thought, funny and clever. But at the same time, a total slam to Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook. And then the icing on the cake is Tim Cook was kind of passive aggressively saying, hey, look, we are making sure your data is private and it's not being exploited.
Right. But my point here is that people are tense enough about this that Tim Cook's comment that privacy would eventually become a selling point may be starting to come true. Maybe.
It may be. I mean, there's a lot of people that previously didn't have too much concern about their online privacy, but now do. I think a lot of that new concern is because people didn't understand. The average person didn't understand. And a lot of this for the average person is pretty intimidating and feels way too technical and way over their head. So they don't get what's really happening and they don't understand the potential ramifications. Now they're starting to understand because there's this very tangible thing where they can say, oh, look at the Cambridge Analytica thing. That affects me directly. My personal information was taken without my knowledge. And, yeah.
I would hazard that a lot of people who are upset about it don't get that either.
They probably don't, but they suddenly decided that their privacy may be important.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and it's okay for someone to feel their privacy is important, even if they didn't before. And even if they don't understand the technical reasons for why something happened or exactly why they should be protective of their privacy, they just know it's an important thing to them now. That's okay.
Yeah, all right. I'll give you that. So the question, though, I mean, can Facebook reform itself enough for us to trust it? It's possible for me. It actually is possible for me. I mean, I'd want to see a whole lot, and I need to see the proof in the pudding.
Yeah, there needs to be an unprecedented level of transparency on Facebook's part, and they need to have independent audits of what they're doing. And there's a lot Facebook would have to do to get my trust.
Starting with who is the which senator did you cover this morning?
Oh, Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana.
From Louisiana, right? Republican from Louisiana who busted Mark Zuckerberg and said that your end user agreement frankly sucks.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he said. It sucks. And
you know, there was laughter. Even Mark Zuckerberg smiled. And he said that your end user agreement was designed to cover your butt.
Uh huh. I think
rather he said than inform cover the user
your hind end, something like that. But yeah, and yeah, it seems that Senator Kennedy was upset and offended by the user agreement that Facebook has.
Right. And his point was, I saw him interviewed on CNN later that day and by one of the anchors. And she asked him, do you think Facebook's going to take your admonishment home and do something good with it or not? And he said he didn't know, but he hoped so, blah, 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 which is interesting. But my point here is that you could start there. You could start with like making that end user agreement about protecting us and protecting our interests. That's one place that the Facebook could start. But everything, it would have to be a lot of systematic ground up institutionalized changes where they stopped looking at us as the product to be exploited and started looking at us as the user to be protected while they can also still make money. Which, to Google's end, I think Google has been doing that mostly all along.
Certainly, it seems that they've been doing it in a better way than Facebook.
Yeah, we're still the product. I'm not saying that we're not the product with Google. I'm just saying that they have been doing a better job of being protectors of our information even while they're exploiting it.
Yeah. And these are more reasons why Facebook would have to do a lot to win my trust. I'm just not feeling it.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. It's going to be interesting to see what comes of that, where it goes, if any kind of regulation comes out of it. I got it, by the way, one more thing about this, because I know it hit both of us, the image, especially like the top-down image of Mark Zuckerberg sitting down, being surrounded by all these photographers. It was a really, I mean, like, I got to give that man a lot of credit for keeping his you-know-what together.
No kidding. I mean, I was creeped out just looking at the photo, and I wasn't even there. But they're seeing him sitting at that desk for the hearing and just packed people almost on top of him, people practically on top of each other with their cameras, and everyone had their camera taking those photos. Oh my God.
Yep.
That was crazy. And I mean, it was like watching a bunch of jackals moving in for the kill.
Yeah, totally. Anyway, yeah, it was a rather stark image. And you know, that's too very, I think there was more press interest in this than a lot of Senate hearings, because of the high profile nature of Mark Zuckerberg, and it was his first big appearance in this kind of setting. But a lot of people get subjected to that, and there was some aspect of the way he was being covered that made that put you more in the driver's seat of, you know, of what it might be like.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, just kind of interesting. All right, let's see here. Our topic: can green be profitable?
And I'm assuming you're not referring to colors, hair dye.
Well, that could probably be profitable too.
Sure.
I mean, no, I'm talking about green energy. I'm talking about Apple meeting its goal of being 100% of its corporate operations being 100% powered by renewable energy around the world.
I think that's a pretty impressive achievement.
Yeah, Apple's been real close for a long time, like 96-98%.
Yeah.
And for the last 2 or 3 years, probably. But they've now hit 100%.
I mean, they've been close enough for a while that had they wanted to, they probably could have said, yeah, we're 100% renewable energy, and no one would have questioned it. But yeah, I mean, this is a big thing. And Apple seems to be able to turn a tidy profit. So I guess that means that, yes, it's possible for companies to use green energy so they're more environmentally friendly and still make money.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it is. Okay. All right. Let me just be blunt. The environment should not be political. Science should not be political. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous that science has become politicized. And I believe that a big part of why it has become politicized is because of the work by capital and fossil fuel industries to discredit the science behind climate science, to discredit climate science. And they have successfully done so. And there are far, far too many people in the U.S. It's a lot less prevalent in the rest of the world, but there are far too many in the U.S. who think that climate science is undecided. And it's not. 97% of climate scientists agree that human activity is changing the climate.
Mm-hmm.
And that climate is mostly a warming tendency throughout the planet, where average temperatures are increasing. In some places, actually, some places might actually end up getting colder, and some places might end up getting warmer, and some places will get wetter, and some places will get drier. It's you know, there's a lot of shifting that's going involved. But on average, temperatures are rising. The ice caps are melting. The glaciers are melting, and it's caused by human activity. And of the 3% of scientists who don't agree with this, a big portion of them are funded by fossil fuel industry, who wants things to keep going just as they are, so they can keep making money without changing. There's actually plenty of ways to make money with green energy, but whatever. So,
yeah, but if you have an industry that has been making money hand over fist for decades, and it just keeps rolling in, you don't want things to change, because you don't like having money rolling in faster than you can possibly spend it.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, that's kind of like, you know, the human condition in a nutshell. But the interesting thing to me is that Apple touts its environmental initiatives, but they don't go around crowing it a whole lot. Like I remember there's one thing that Tim Cook said. He said that this was when Apple was in the middle of its patent battle with Samsung and the broader Android community as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim Cook quipped that transparency and working conditions and renewable energy and not using the poisonous chemicals in their products and not using poisonous chemicals in their manufacturing processes, that these are all things that he wished that people would copy from Apple. That's about the closest. So do I. And that's about the closest that he's ever come to trying to be, to make a real point of that.
Yeah. Well, there are other people that are making the point. So it's,
well, but here's the interesting thing to me. One of the big arguments against climate change deniers is that it's just too expensive. Like that somehow dying is less expensive than modifying the way we live and work.
Well, Brian, to be fair, if you're dead, you don't have to pay rent.
It's a fair point. I like your choice of rent versus mortgage payment, by the way, because
that's where most people are anymore.
Because it's really suitable. But here's the thing. Apple is the world's most profitable company by a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple is operating on 100% renewable energy. And that, to me, is the fly in the ointment of those who say that being green is too expensive.
Okay, so now what about the people that say, yes, but Apple makes so much money, how could they not be profitable while taking on this expensive, let's be green mantle?
Well, that is sort of a good question, except for the fact that that Apple's operations are so extensive. I mean, Apple's retail operations, right? Not just its corporate headquarters, not just its, you know, those few manufacturing operations that it directly owns. But everything that Apple is doing everywhere is 100% renewable right now. Mm-hmm. And that's a massive scale. And Apple has had to buy some green energy and develop its own plants, develop its own solar plants, at Apple Park 2.0, there's a fuel cell generation plant. Mm-hmm. In addition to the solar panels. Apple is, of course, owns some solar operations and some fuel cell operations in North Carolina or South Carolina that we know of. And yeah, Apple has money that it can use to develop these things, but using that money didn't break Apple and didn't keep it from being the world's most profitable company. And that to me says very specifically that you can still be enormously profitable and develop and use green energies.
I'm sure for some companies, it would take longer to get to that point than others because you need to make the transition in a fiscally responsible way so you don't go out of business. But I think it's probably attainable for more companies than people realize.
It probably is. And again, Apple is the proof that it's not going to kill you if you do it.
Yeah. And just to make sure people get this, Apple's 100% renewable energy, that doesn't mean their corporate headquarters. That means every single thing they do, including all of their retail stores.
Retail, manufacturing, offices, all the stuff's being supplied by 100% renewable. And even in China. They built, of course, to do business in China currently, you have to have a local partner. They have a local partner. They did a solar farm. It's somewhere on the steppes of, I think it's Mongolia, actually. And they raised the solar panels high enough so the grass would still grow and yaks could still graze on it underneath the panels.
That's very clever.
Yeah, probably keeps them from also being smashed by yaks, but you know.
Yeah, by yaks looking for grass.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway, it's a fascinating achievement. I think it's an important one, and I think that it's an important example for Apple to make. And I would very much like to see more companies cottoning on to what Apple's doing in this particular space.
Yeah, I'm hoping that more companies follow Apple's lead now.
Yep.
Yeah, I would like that a lot.
Yeah, we shall see. I really would like to stop seeing science politicized. That's ridiculous. Science is science.
Yeah, but it's
science doesn't care what we think.
No, it doesn't. I have a T-shirt that says that. And every now and then I'll just wear it around because, hey, you know, I found out if I go out naked all the time, I'll just get in trouble. But it's fascinating the reactions I get to the shirt. There's a lot of people that see it and they're like, I love that shirt. And it's so true. And occasionally I'll get someone that comes up to me and thinks that I'm wearing it to insult them and their beliefs personally.
Well, you kind of are.
I suppose I kind of am. Oh my God. Brian, I'm a dick.
Yeah, but you know, but there's still just kind of but it shouldn't be that way. It's a true statement. Science doesn't care what we think. And this includes science that we don't yet understand. Doesn't really, you know, science doesn't care what we think.
Yeah.
No one should be insulted by that because it's true.
Yeah. And there's a lot of scientists that thought they knew something only to find out that through scientific experimentation, they were wrong.
Yeah. There are things that we believe right now that will eventually be proven to be either wrong or not entirely correct.
And someday, if we find out that science actually is some sort of entity with emotions and it does care what we think, then I'm going to feel really bad about that shirt.
Oh, that's an interesting metaphysical idea.
Yeah.
If science is actually a being of some sort. Wow.
Science wants us to study it, to learn more so we can appreciate it, and then it achieves its own self-worth through our understanding of it.
Yeah, this is one reason why, by the way, I like science fiction. Because like I'm often reminded that, you know, there are places where we could have shown up if we could time travel back with a flashlight, where we would have been burned as a witch, not just for the time travel.
Right.
For having a flashlight.
For having a flashlight. Yep.
You know, and certainly once upon a time, everybody knew that you could fly. It's obvious. Can't fly.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And, you know, so, I mean, science, like I said, there are things that we believe. There are things that you and I believe right now that will be proven either erroneous or at the very least not completely understood. Like there's additional things that actually change, that would change our understanding if we can understand them now.
I'm okay with that, because
let alone, of course, the brainiacs out there, the real scientists. Mm-hmm. Who know, you know, 1,000 times more than we do about their particular field. There's things that they believe is true right now, or think or suspect is true, I should say, mm-hmm. that will eventually be proven to not be the case.
Yeah.
Right. And, but the thing is that scientific reality is true right now, whether or not we know it. Still doesn't care what we think.
Yeah, but then eventually we know it. And
yes.
It's just so cool. I love when we learn new things and discover new things.
Yes.
It's so cool. Yeah. Hey, we're out of time.
Yeah, we are out of time for these various digressions today.
You know, it's been a fun and wild ride with you, Mr. Toad.
Yay.
Yay. No, that's in a good way. Mr. Toad's Wild Ride was always fun. Yeah. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Let's see here. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. One of these days I'm going to figure this script out, by the way. Me too. Our bandwidth is provided. What is this? Episode 457? Day now. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, the basis by Boom Recorded, just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
And head over to facebook.com/groups/contextmachine. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes.
You can tell me what an idiot I am. And we'll see you online at the Mac Observer.